This podcast is not for the faint of heart. It's filled with evil villains, mean-spirited criminals, and violent sociopaths. And that's just the protagonists. Listener discretion is advised.
Last time on Burning Edge.
The team has been asked to keep their boss, Mr. Garrow, safe and sound during a high-level negotiation with the UCAS diplomats. They've checked out the venue ahead of the meeting, and having discovered some unsettling things about recent history there, are ready to actually have the meeting go down. We join the team as they arrive at the motor pool, a bit late, to head to the meeting. You arrive at the motor pool around 8:30-ish. Mr. Garrow is already there with Kat by his side. She looks like she's been kept up way too late, clearly in need of a cat nap. He looks super old, like always. His human genes haven't allowed him to escape 60 years of not taking care of himself, and his body's starting to show it. The wiry hair his mailed pattern baldness has spared is a dark gray. The uncovered scalp is splotchy with liver spots and birthmarks forming an old man version of a Rorschach test. He's clearly not particularly worried about his appearance, though his dark suit is perfectly tailored to fit his substantial girth. When the team arrives, he taps his watch impatiently before getting right up into John Baptiste's face, giving John Baptiste an unfortunately close view of his tobacco-stained teeth.
For God's sake, get your dreck together. I told you I wanted to hit up Grand Tavern for breakfast. I can't do this on an empty stomach. This is your last fragging warning. Next time you frag up, I'm having you reassigned to Vladivostok. Let's go.
He steps over to the night sky and waits for his door to be open for him, looking at his watch.
Catherine does it.
As she opens the door and he nods to her to go ahead and get in.
She does so.
He slaps your hoop as you climb into the spacious interior of the limo.
She doesn't flinch at that anymore.
He pulls the door closed behind him.
Well, that's... Did anybody else remember that alert? No?
He did not mention this to me.
Whatever. Let's get on with this. Let's not annoy him anymore.
Yeah. All right. I open the rest of the doors to let everybody else in.
So I assume you're sitting in the driver's seat.
Driver again.
In the back, it's got the two sets of seats that are facing each other, like a limo style, even though it's not a stretch or anything. It's just big enough to have two people looking at each other. The back doors are suicide doors, and then the front doors, it's got the normal driver and passenger seat up front.
Cassandra's got a duffel that she's packed in the vehicle next to her. She's propped her arm up awkwardly on it.
I'm going to hop in the front seat and put on my seatbelt.
Safety first.
And then I'm going to rig into it.
Cassandra and Micah, where are you sitting? Are you sitting out taking shotgun or in the back?
Oh, in the back with the client.
I really think another vehicle. And here's why, Cassandra. Because I need line of sight for a lot of things, shooting. And if I was in another vehicle, I would have that.
Did you fill out the requisition form?
So you do have the two APCs that are going to be bracketing your car on the way?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'll just ride in one of the other cars in the detail.
So they pull up, you know, all the guys that are in them, all dressed in their matching black fatigues, carrying assault rifles or whatever. They're all pretty well armed. Finally, the caravan starts off pretty quickly after y'all are finally seated. And you're off. So the route is slightly different than the one y'all took yesterday, because the front APC is trying to maintain some sort of unpredictability so that if anyone were to attack them, that they wouldn't be able to plan it in advance. It's only a 16-kilometer drive from the Arcology's garage to the hotel, and your convoy is really moving. With your extraterritoriality and big Evo logos on the side of the APCs, they're not particularly worried about any law enforcement stopping them, though it does tend to paint them as somewhat of a target. The streets are still a bit icy from the recent winter storm. Potholes, always a problem in St. Louis, have not gotten any better. With the recent ice, they've in fact gotten worse. The night sky's suspension is struggling to keep the back comfortable. So you arrive at the hotel a little bit before 9, just a few minutes. The convoy was really hauling ass across St. Louis. You pull up front. There's several more hotel people than were there yesterday, getting ready to receive. Lots of people wearing hotel attire, white gloves, come open the door of the night sky to let the occupants out. Almost immediately, this balding dude gets out. He's got super fancy shoes and a perfectly tailored suit to cover his fat self. He gets out. You can kind of see a little chuckle as he breaks wind. He reaches back for his briefcase.
Catherine pushes it to him.
And he reaches his hand in to give you a hand out.
She is surprised, but gently puts her hand in his to take it.
Halfway out, he lets go and turns on his heel to head into the hotel.
Catherine finishes getting out of the night sky, straightens her extremely fine sleeping tiger from Vashon Island. Her right arm is a cyber arm, but you can't tell from touch.
So is your suit jacket tailored to show off your feminine assets? Chuck Garrow seems like the kind of guy that would like you to show off a lot of cleavage.
Yes, it is. There's no jacket, though. It's just the one piece.
Sure.
She doesn't have a lot, but what is there is shown off.
So you get out, straighten your clothing, and head inside after. He's not waiting for you.
Of course not.
Immediately after her steps out Cassandra, hiking her duffel bag up on her shoulder and closing her armored jacket just a bit more. It is in the company colors with the Evo logo prominently displayed on what would be the left breast if the jacket were zipped shut. Underneath that is a standard company security uniform. Long, straight pants. Boots of seemingly combat grade, but possibly not actually steel-toed. She has a somewhat squared-off face, a bit brutish-looking, but she seems to have done some little bits to try and dress that up a bit. Relatively short, brunette hair, prominent green eyes, Caucasian. She's just below average height for a female of her age, but rather more densely muscled. It's obvious even through portions of her jacket. This is the obvious front of the security team, the one that's meant to be noticed, the deterrent.
So John Baptiste slides out of the front seat, glances around, scanning his surroundings, wiping the drool from his lips. He levels his eyes at the approaching valet. And as the valet approaches, he shuts the door, flips him a cred stick with 15 EU on it, and lets him know, "Your services will not be needed today." And he has the car pull away and starts circling the block. Jean-Baptiste is dressed in a jet black suit, pinstripe suit, along with ivory inlaid dark rimmed glasses. And has a little bit of pudding stain on his inside lapel. Jean-Baptiste stands 5'7", slender man, black hair, pale skin, and a slightly arrogant but unconfident posture and mannerisms, as he seems a little bit nervous and jittery whenever he's interacting with individuals.
Micah exits the vehicle that's pulled up behind the lead car. The back door swings open and she climbs out, yawning, and does a big stretch. She reaches back into the vehicle and pulls out the suit jacket for her three-piece black men's suit. She puts it on, covering up the holster and gun that she has across her shoulders, buttons it up, and it is a black men's suit fitted to her body. And as she buttons it up, she looks at JB and looks back down at her suit, scowls a bit, and then makes sure her hair is nice and neat, the slick back men's haircut, brunette. She's got brown eyes. She's got tannish skin. You could tell she's an ethnicity She's got a little Mediterranean in her. And once she makes sure she's presentable enough for Garrow here, she looks at everybody else, hands out like, well, we going in?
Yes, let's get this over with.
Sounds good to me.
So the front APC pulls off and goes into their pre-appointed patrol, whatever their security team has decided to do around the building. The Night Sky, as Jean-Baptiste instructed it, has decided to go into its holding pattern, and the other APC follows it out into wherever it's going. Inside the lobby, Mr. Garrow has stopped to discuss something quietly with one of the concierge. Finally, the concierge waves over a bellhop. Happens to be the same young man you talked to the other day. He nods to those of you he met yesterday, Cassandra and Kat, and asks y'all to follow him and leads you down the hallways, past the alcoves and the bar. The bar is already surprisingly full for basically a few minutes before 9 a.m. down the hall to the promenade meeting room. Inside the promenade are the two tables that you saw being set up yesterday. They've got the white tablecloths that they put on top of things for meetings such as this. The stage is still set up in the corner, clearly not used. There's 6 seats set up on either side for the negotiators. There's some fancy pens set out in front of the lead negotiators on either side, as well as some of those binders that you put fancy documents in so that they don't get creased or messed up. The UCAS congregation is already in the room, kind of milling around in the corner. When they see Chuck Garrow and a few of the other Evo people have finally arrived and are ready to begin, they all kind of take their seats, and it's nod that it is time for you hired help, basically to buzz off for now.
Catherine takes her designated seat next to Garrow. And
I imagine she would be standing behind.
Mm-hmm. Then yes, she stands there.
Thinks it's people.
Yeah, the seats are for like the, you know, people with like a C before their title.
Uh-huh.
Or a V.
Oh, chairman, vice president.
Yeah.
CEO.
CEO, COO, some whatever.
CIO.
She stands behind him and is seen and not heard.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
The rest of us are being gestured to leave the room?
Yep.
This is great, Cassandra. I'm going to go find my friend at the bar.
You know, normally I would probably give you a bit more, dreck for that, but with how busy that bar is, frankly, I would like a couple of eyes down there. So thank you. Thank you, Micah, for being you.
Aw. You know, you're sweet. All right, I'm going to go to that bar, and I will take one for the team. I will be there all day if I need to be.
Just try to keep your senses. Cassandra's smiling even as she shakes her head.
JB, will you be joining them?
No, I'm going to set up in the lobby and keep an eye on that general area.
Oh, you're going to be professional?
I wouldn't call it professional.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to remain near the office in question, at least one door width away from the door at all times.
You don't want to be hit by the door as it gets blown in?
That's exactly why.
Huh.
But yeah, it's like Cassandra will outright, you know, make a measurement of the door's width, like marking that on her arm, stepping away from the door, matching that length to the door frame, and standing no closer than that at any time.
As you're leaving the promenade meeting room, the UCAS security detail looks surprisingly outfitted like y'all. They're typical suited government bureaucrat people. They're kind of congregating on one side of the doorway in the hall, talking to each other in low voices, laughing about whatever sitcom they watched on the Trids last night. Talking about the urban brawl game the St. Louis Slaughter played against whatever the Seattle team was.
Cassandra fidgets with her earbuds a bit, making sure to keep the audio enhancement and sound filter modules geared so that she could pick up if there's any disturbance, but not necessarily have anything concrete if somebody says something confidential. Not enough to pick up words, but enough to pick up that something's off.
Y'all are so paranoid.
Yes. Yes, we are. Security detail in the sixth world.
Mike, is that paranoid? This is going to go like every other job before.
Catherine isn't either.
Hmm.
Y'all head to the bar. Your buddy is not, in fact, working. He's the afternoon, evening shift guy. So James is not there. Sorry, you'll have to find someone else to torture. JB, you go to the lobby, and there's not as much typical guest traffic coming in and out. Most of the traffic at this point is all leaving. Guests slept overnight. They're checking out to go back to the airport or to go to whatever meetings they're in town for. There's not a whole lot of conferences actually at the hotel right now. Pretty much everything has been taken over for this one event. They've expected to have a lot more media later to take the typical pictures of signing ceremonies that happen, especially when basically two nations get together to discuss something of this magnitude. In this case, it's land rights, probably Evo buying a large chunk of land from UCAS, which takes a lot of, it's got like, what if there's oil or iridium or whatever below. With that boring part being said, for those of you that have trouble focusing.
Oh, yeah. Well, to put it simply, she's not even trying.
So while these corporate bigwigs and government bureaucrats are talking about the things that they're talking about,
Catherine definitely starts up some show or something to watch and listen to on her D&I, because she is not paying any attention to what is going on.
So are you like a 7-year-old with your phone, like playing a YouTube video at full blast?
To herself, but it's D&I, so no one else can hear it. She's probably watching like Urban Brawl rerun.
So yeah, as you were walking in, you overheard the other people talking about the St. Louis Slaughter game from last night, so you're checking out the highlights?
She is absolutely doing that, yes.
Clearly, Mr. Garrow is not particularly happy with that, but he's busy, doesn't really say much. Jean-Baptiste, you hear a loud thump followed by a metallic clang, like someone dropping a very heavy metal grate of some kind on a tile floor.
Where does it come from?
When you walked back towards the lobby, you kind of come around a corner into the lobby, and it's back down the hall that you had come from, so we're back towards where the meeting room is.
Okay, I'm going to message Cassandra.
Cassandra, did you hear that?
Continually trying to fidget with these earbuds. Don't want to pick up anything I shouldn't be, but you know how it is. What'd you hear?
It was some sort of thumping sound? I don't know, like something heavy dropped on the ground.
Well, okay, that's weird. I haven't seen any staff moving by with trolleys. I'll check it out. Like, what, just down the hall or something?
And Cassandra just kind of leans over, makes sure she isn't missing something, just barely out of sight down the corner. And she starts moving them in that vague direction.
I do not know exactly where it's from, somewhere near you.
I'll check it out.
She shakes her head, pulls her hand away from her ear, does already have that pan kind of sitting under her coat, ready to react to something if, you know, if there were to be a threat, ever to dutiful security.
As you pass by the other security team talking about some new Neil the Orc Barbarian spinoff show that has been making the rounds in pop culture, you walk by them and they kind of give you that, like, hey, we're doing the same job nod that people do. The hall itself goes down for like 30 yards and then splits off into a T intersection. You had checked it out yesterday, if I remember correctly, and one side goes to a exit that goes outside and the other one goes to the employee area.
Right, because this is when I was looking for alternate entrances and exits. So do I see anything out of place? Anything on the floor scuffed?
Yep. One of the doors to the employee area has been blown off its hinges. Like, debt cord, it's just gone. It's not the employee entrance that y'all went to harass that poor innocent spider or head of housekeeping or whoever it was that you harassed, but towards like the where they store stuff. It was a kind of a heavy door to keep people from going through it.
Cassandra immediately keys into the DNI again.
We've got forced entry here. Door blown off hinges.
She'll reluctantly pause it and start looking around and just being a little bit more aware, kind of measuring the distance between her and the stage.
Cassandra's going to move up to check the door. She's not going to say anything to the other security team because she finds it weird that they haven't reacted yet.
So you're checking out the door. What is the rest of the team doing now that they've been... How many drinks has Micah had?
487.
How long has she been here?
We'll say 20 minutes.
One. She's not a frat boy.
I'm getting on comms with the security response team.
We have a code orange. Be ready for to go. How you say? Hello? In copy?
What's orange again?
Forced entry. Signs of forced entry discovered. Recent.
Where?
Looks like staff access behind the conference rooms.
All right. Give me a minute. Micah is going to slip in to Astral and see what she can see.
Okay. JB, you're on the comms trying to bring people up. You've noticed that there is a whole lot of Matrix noise suddenly.
All right, can I get in contact with the APCs?
Not at the moment.
Can I do a Matrix perception to see where this activity is coming from?
Sure.
But the noise makes it harder.
Is it noise or is it just like activity?
I guess activity that's causing noise.
Oh, so it does cause me to have problems communicating?
Yeah. Whenever you're looking at the Matrix, which you pretty much always are, you're starting to notice that there's more spam pop-ups and things are kind of glitching, like the AR feeds that you normally get from the hotel saying number of vacancies and their current room rates, which can change minute to minute based on complex algorithm. You know, those things are kind of glitching out. One second it's 180 million a night. The next second it's like 18 million a night. And then it goes up to 1800 million a night. With three hits on a Matrix perception, you've noticed that the host itself is still there, but there's kind of like a dead zone.
Where's the dead zone?
It's towards the employee access area.
Employee access area, is that where Cassandra is near?
It's down the hall from where you dropped off Mr. Garrow.
Okay, but JB wouldn't know that?
You would know that it's employee access, but you would know general area where it is.
I'm going to contact Micah and...
Micah, get off your ass. Stop drinking. Get over here.
She doesn't answer. She's slipped into the astral.
Micah, where are you?
She can't hear anything.
So you close your eyes and open your third eye to look around in the magical realm. So what would the bar look like to someone perceiving astrally before we kind of move you away from the bar itself?
So anything that is inanimate is just gray, correct?
Yep.
Just like gray nondescript blocks and shapes.
Although things could have residual traces of
yes,
strong emotions.
An aura. Or strong emotions, if something happened there. The people would have auras, and those that were awakened would also shine a bit brighter, a little beacony, if there are any such people.
I'm sure there's a mage or two. You know, it's a large bar. There's probably 25, 30 people in there. I'm sure a couple of them are awakened, even if they don't necessarily know it, advertise it, or use their powers.
So slipping into the bar, it's basically going to make my way. I assume I've been debriefed on a map, and I mean, I saw where the room was, and they said staff area. So I will move over to that area of the Ritz-Carlton and see what I can see.
You could just go through walls when you're astral, right?
Mm-hmm. I was going to ask if you were going to go through the walls or if you were going to not go through walls.
No, straight shot. And it's, I think you also move like really fast.
Yeah, you're at the speed of thought.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
One could argue that it would be really hard to move at the speed of thought to places you've never been just because it'd be hard to stop.
I can understand that, but luckily I've been here, so.
I was mainly just wondering if you were going to go out through the lobby where you might notice an alcove.
No, this would be efficiency, so it would be as the crow flies.
The area that you're kind of going to is another part of the employee area. So it's kind of sad. It's just kind of, I don't know, purpley. Like there's just a residual, like sad purple aura over almost everything. While the employees at Ritten are probably not treated particularly poorly, they're probably in the Sixth World not treated great. I do not mean to throw any shade at Ritz-Carlton for how they treat their people. There seems to be a few people there getting ready to, I don't know, charge or whatever. There's 6 metahumans.
Okay. Are any of them awake?
No, none of these are.
Okay. But I have 6. They look like they're ready to charge. So immediately, power of thought, slip back, get on the comms, and just yelling. Guys, there's a big group there about to breach. You might want to get out of there.
Cat, get them out. I'll delay.
Catherine does so. It's like, taps him on the shoulder.
He turns around with absolute disgust in his eyes. Like, what the frag are you doing?
We've got incoming. We've got to go.
What do you mean incoming?
And Cassandra's just rushing forward, pulls her weapon from her holster as this conversation's going on until she finds any sort of contact.
So unfortunately for you, you do not get to move through walls.
Yeah, unfortunately for me, I can't just go through walls.
I guess if you try hard enough, you can make anything into a door.
I'm sorry, I am not a troll.
Catherine is going to sprint over the stage and scoop out from underneath it the duffel bag if it's still there.
So the rest of the UCAS delegation is just like, what the actual frag is going on here? And they start yelling at Evo people and Evo people. They're just yelling at each other like, you're just trying to derail this. Like, we're almost done. This is a stalling tactic.
Catherine grabs the bag and is right back at Garrow's side.
What the hell is their security doing? Why am I the only one back here?
You walk past them and you've been DNIing, so I'm not sure they know anything's wrong, right? They didn't hear the...
I didn't say anything to them, but they should be figuring out, even with a little bit of a delay, that something's been going wrong if there's Matrix noise, is Cassandra's reasoning.
Sure.
I'm sure there's plenty of reasons why they aren't aware, including Cassandra's own mistakes here. That doesn't mean she's not a hypocrite.
They thought, well, the rest of your team just kind of wandered off. Why? Maybe that's what you're doing.
Yeah, it's with my hand under my coat.
I mean, maybe you ate some bad clams and you just have indigestion.
I'm just giving the reasoning for why Cassandra's annoyed.
Yeah.
Catherine is verbally shouted once in the room, but that was all.
I presume that I'm finding doors that haven't had to be blown open and I'm having to clear rooms so that I don't get blown away.
Yeah, they've got like some storage rooms with those wire shelving units.
The wire shelving units, which somehow are even worse than just standard shelves to try and pick your way around and look through.
Yeah, they've got like random cardboard boxes and plastic organizational tote things.
Cassandra could be technically moving faster through these rooms, but she can't be sure that she's not going to just walk past somebody who's all cybered up and thus maybe didn't show up to Micah.
Yeah, especially since Micah kind of went directly to the employee area.
Mm-hmm.
Strangely enough, happened to be where a large group of people were. Meanwhile, you're going through door by door. As you're clearing the rooms, they're standard employee things. They're not clean. They're not particularly well maintained. There's a laundry room that's got 15 laundry stations, washer dryer sets. I don't know if I can come up with 10 different rooms that would be back in the employee area, but it's taking you a little bit. JB, what are you up to?
Do I have contact with the car?
You start to get signals in and out. Do you have electronic warfare? Because you can use that to try to get through the noise. All are five hits. You've started to kind of cut through the noise at least a little bit to try to get your signal out. You're basically going to war with the internet gremlins that are keeping your signal from reaching out. You can't stop the signal, but they're trying. You do manage to reach to at least establish a very low fidelity connection to your HDR team, as well as to the Night Sky.
I'm going to tell the Night Sky to make its way to the entrance.
Sure.
And then I'm going to get on the comms with the response team.
Code red! Code red! We have an issue!
You finally get a response back, and it is completely garbled, broken up. Sounds like talking. Could be yelling. It's hard to tell.
Shit! I get on comms with the team.
Oh, we're not going to have the response team for a while.
All right. I'm trying to get him to the front of the building.
Is he even allowing you to get him out of the room?
Yeah, so first of all, was the duffel bag still there?
Yes.
All right, she grabs that and runs back to him and starts trying to, like, puts her hand on his arm and starts trying to tug him out of the room to get him to go with her.
Do you think there's any chance of him actually doing so?
Oh, probably not, but Catherine's got to try anyway.
Would you like to try to tug him out of the room?
She's going to try to get him to come willingly first, and then if he absolutely won't listen, she will try to, probably unsuccessfully, but her arm is strong.
But her legs aren't.
Her legs are not, no.
The rest of you, not so much.
Not so much, no.
You could probably, like, pull off his suit jacket arm, like, just rip it from the sleeve with your super strong arm.
Yeah, don't want to do that. And it's also not insanely strong, it's just strong. So he's ignoring her.
Would you like to try to talk him out of there?
Yeah. She's gonna, like, beg him to come with her. Please, there's armed people.
He's pretty heated with the UCAS people that are yelling at it. The commotion in there has finally drawn the attention of the UCAS security team. So they open the door and come in and see everyone yelling. They go to their side. You're the only one left on your side. The rest of the Evo team, you know, they're starting to notice that their comms are down too across the board. You start to see security people kind of grabbing their people and starting to head towards the door. Kat, what door do you want to take him to? You remember that we had the door at the back of the room, as well as the one that everyone has been using to go in and out.
She's basically going to try to take him through the straight out through that straight back through the most direct way to get to the front of the building.
So the door we used to come in.
Yes. Please go, sir.
So he finally kind of realizes what's going on and agrees to be pulled out of there with you.
Catherine's just going to move as fast as he can.
I imagine you are in considerably better shape than him.
Yeah, because she's made in a vat. Yeah, it's made to be in shape.
I've got him. We're headed towards the front of the building.
Cassandra's going to pause in her current room for just the moment, and then she's going to key into the DNI again.
This group can get eaten by UCAS for all I care. Get Garrow out. I'm on my way back.
And Cassandra's going to start retracing her steps, mostly keeping her attention back in the direction of the supposed hostiles, though. It's like she's not giving them her back.
Almost like she's a professional security person?
Yes, indeed.
Huh. Micah, you, last we checked, were still in the bar, just coming out of Astral.
Just coming out of Astral, and she'll get up and start, she'll exit the bar to move toward that group of people.
Ma'am, your tab!
Ignoring that.
They already know who you are. I'm pretty sure they've got your information on file.
My friend's gonna cover my tab. He's my friend now.
you probably were just drinking on the open Evo tab, so...
Yeah.
Now, would you, like, stand up after waking up and slam back whatever unfinished beverage you had and put it back down on the bar before running out, or would you leave some perfectly good whiskey in a...
She would leave it, yeah. Unfortunately, she'd leave it.
A little tear in your eye.
Cass is rubbing off on me.
Making you professional.
Fucking responsibility and professionalism.
Oh, God. The worst.
Ugh. It really is a dystopian future. Micah is voiced by Jupiter Sanders.
Jean-Baptiste, voiced by Jeff Elaine.
Hello, I'm Cassandra Miller, and I'm played by Quar.
I am Tim Sterer, and I play Catherine.
The Topps Company, Incorporated has sole ownership of the names, logo, artwork, marks, photographs, sounds, audio, video, and or any proprietary material used in connection with the game Shadowrun. The Topps Company, Incorporated has granted permission to Burning Edge to use such names, logos, artworks, marks, and or any proprietary materials for promotional and informational purposes on its website and podcast, but does not endorse and is not affiliated with Burning Edge in any official capacity whatsoever.
Thank you, GM, for advising me to spend that last edge. You're a good GM.
I'm not. I'm really not.
I love you. You are smart. I should listen to you more often.
She also doesn't want to get beaten when she for not being fast enough to come when called.
Whoa. Oh, thank God.
And I thought I was implicit.
Wow. So happy.
Real mature.
More wow. Words at the end of that sentence.
I can't.
Woo. You just don't want to ride up front with JB.
Do you blame me?
He might have some pudding in his pocket from yesterday.
Ugh. Oh, no, there's no pudding.
I'm so proud.
Yeah, you're supposed to be the mean one.
I know. I'm so proud. I feel like I'm influencing, and this is nice.
Unless they employ any frat boys, and then I just assume that those guys are all assholes.
We've picked a weird, like, demographic to bully. It's...
Yeah, who hurt you?
I imagine that you have bonus dice in mob control, given your background.
That was fantastic! How dare you?